Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode of Torkum Talk. Today I've had a longtime friend on, Jen Keen. Jen has been a woman who has persevered through a male-dominated workforce that is the auto industry. She has gone from a salesperson all the way up to a highly sought-after consultant, managing and directing several dealerships across the U.S. And more, with additional work. And basically we're on talking about how is it that she's able to do that when it's such a pro-testosterone type of environment, and how does she deal with like the double-edged sword of, since she just had a kid, of people saying, oh well, you should be working so you could provide for your family, for your kid, and then, oh, what, you're working instead of being there for your kid. A double-edged sword. So we dive into that and try to help put an end to that sort of awful double-edged sword stereotype that is said here in Bend and across the U.S. So please enjoy our conversation. We go deep into this kind of stuff. Hope you enjoy it. Thanks. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So Jen, you and I have worked together for, let's see, the first time I met you was when you were the GM for Subaru of Bend, right?
Yes.
And how long ago was that?
Gosh, 2.5 years?
No, it was longer than that.
Three?
Yeah, three or four.
3 years ago?
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking four, but okay. Mm-hmm. So 3 or 4 years ago, you were the Subaru.
Well, when you met me, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
That's like not when I, yeah.
Yeah.
Almost five, okay.
Yeah. And basically, I've watched you explode a career in an industry that, to be fair, is just not, there's not a lot of women in it. And there's not a lot of women who are successful in it. And that industry is the auto industry. And so here you are going through and breaking the mold of that. Being able to go through and actually like propel and become GMs. And so if you could just walk through, where did you start in the auto industry?
Yeah.
And how did you get into it?
So I got into it, my dad's aunt was the hot dog lady, and she would go around.
That's the hot dog,
yeah,
lady.
She would go around and sell hot dogs at all the events at the dealerships.
Okay.
And so the dealership would put on an event and they'd bring her in and she'd sell hot dogs, and she got to know all the dealer principals and all the general managers. And she called me one day out of the blue. I was still in high school, and she said, "Hey, what are you doing for the summer? You need a summer job?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I'm working in the restaurant industry, and then I plan to put myself through college. But, you know, I'd be open to talking about something. What do you got?" And she said, "Well, what do you think about selling cars?" I'm like, "Well, I don't know. I could talk about it."
Mm-hmm.
So she invited me down. She said, "Well, where are you at?" And it was a hot summer day, Saturday. I had just got done wakeboarding. Surprising that I went wakeboarding, I know. That was one time. But, yeah, I was wakeboarding. And she said, "Can you stop in and talk to the GM?" And I stopped in and jumped out in my dress and swimsuit and no interview attire and went in, and they hired me on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
then what did it take for you to start being able to sell cars? It's one thing to get the job, it's another to...
Yeah, so initially I was too young. I was 17, so I couldn't sell cars yet. So they had me doing cold calls in the back room. And when on my 18th birthday, I was able to start selling cars. So they threw me into sales, and luckily I had really great mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And people that, you know, helped me actually learn the process and do the job, and sold a car on my first day selling cars, which was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
And once you sell a car, you know you want it. It's in your blood, and that's what you're going to do. And so I just continued down that path.
But you're also young, and so when I met you, let's just call it 4 years ago, and you were the GM of Subaru, that wasn't your first GM job.
No.
So what was your first one?
So my first one was a GM brand manager of a Fiat store for the Tonkin organization up in Portland.
Okay. And how did you climb that ladder? Because there's two things that typically are consistent when it comes to GMs of dealerships. They're old and they're white males.
Uh-huh.
And you are neither of those things. So... or they're at least males. They're old and they're a guy. Mm-hmm. And you're a young woman. So how old were you when you were the GM of the Fiat store?
So 28 is when I started kind of down that path. I have to give a lot of credit. I worked for the Hanna organization also, Decana, mm-hmm. up in Portland. And Jennifer Hanna was a big promoter of women, mm-hmm. And really spent the time to reach out and care and make sure that my career progressed within their company. And I had worked with the Tonkins prior to going to the Hannas in finance and different roles. And the Tonkins had called and said, hey, we have this position. We'd like to talk to you about it. And it was for the brand manager GM role at Fiat. And I met with them and decided it was the right decision. I called Jennifer Hanna and told her I was going to be making that decision and leave them after 7 years. And she was nothing but supportive and said, you know, there wasn't anything at that time within their company, but that she wished me the best and knew I would do well. And so, I mean, I think it's just having the right people behind you and that believe in you, and the Tonkins as well, to reach out and say, hey, we think you would fit well in this role and we want to give you the opportunity.
Okay. And so what's happening with, like, as you've been climbing the ladder, now you're actually working as a consultant for several dealerships across the country,
mm-hmm.
As they're looking upon basically you for your wisdom, and you give really good wisdom at that. But what kind of trials and tribulations were you going through amongst your journey from when you first had the job, when you were 17 till today, that you saw that guys were not having to deal with?
You know, I would say that for me, what I realized at a young age was that there was no women in the industry. I had one other woman salesperson in the entire company of mm-hmm. 1,500 people.
Really?
Yeah.
1,500, only one?
Yeah.
So just two of you?
Yeah. Correct. For a while.
I knew it was low. I didn't know it was that low. That's like 0.05% or something.
Yeah.
That goes over three times. 0.00. Wow. Okay. So.
And that's in a sales
I don't care
role
what
versus
it's in. That's
yeah.
still low.
yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
And so I, at that point, I realized one, how well women are perceived in that industry, and that guests actually want to deal with women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was pretty successful without having a lot of knowledge of the industry at an early age. And so I just knew, you know, I wanted to stay in it and I wanted to grow in the industry so that I could promote and grow women and get them into the industry, because you can make a great living. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not enough of us.
No.
And so that was my kind of my mission for staying in the industry, was kind of to just change the way people, women specifically, looked at the industry and the
How
desire.
How did women look at the industry?
You know, I think at a young age, when I would tell, you know, even my own family that I was going to sell cars.
Yeah.
It was like, what are you doing? You're a slimy used car salesman. And
uh-huh.
I was like, yeah. And I mean, to this day, my friends still introduce me as a used car salesman. And
uh-huh.
I'm proud of it at that point. I just laugh. But
mm-hmm.
to see other people's face, you know, they're like, oh, gosh, stay away. And I just wanted to change that perception of
mm-hmm.
the business. And then ideally, you know, get more women into the industry. So
How have you been able to get more women into the industry?
Well, I'm a woman,
yeah.
So that helps.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the biggest challenge for the automotive industry alone, is just that you want, you know, I talk to a lot of dealers and they want women in the, into, to talk to a lot of dealers, and they want women to get into the dealership, you know, atmosphere, whether it's fix ops or variable, because they know how great they can be. But it's just a matter of finding the women and getting them interested in coming in and interviewing and applying for those positions. And
so why do you think that's hard? Why is it hard to get women to want to apply?
Just from the stigma of the industry, I think, over the years, you know, that it's a man's world and we're slimy and, you know, we don't respect women or, you know, I don't really know. I didn't personally really ever run into that. And I guess that's even more the catalyst for me wanting to get more women interested, to show them that that's not how it is. And
but you've had to run into some things, like not being included on, like, not being invited on trips or golf outings or stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that
it's just the reality. And I think if I sat around and thought about it a long time, you know, you could get really upset about it and, you know, feel like you're being, you know, treated unfairly. You are a little bit, right? But that's not important.
So what do you do when you feel that? Because that's interesting. Like, when you feel that you've been wrong, how do you deal with it? Because, like, okay, you're not invited on the golf trip that can get you, like, a ton of new business.
Sure.
You are a human, they're humans, and you're just straight up not going. So instead of stewing about it, what do you do?
Go to work.
Okay.
Put your head down. Get past it. Those people will go away.
Yeah.
They won't be there in the long run, so it doesn't matter. Rise above it.
That's, I mean, it's wise advice, because, I mean, we all go through it. There'll be something that we hit in life, whether you're a man or a woman, and you feel wrongly, like wrong was done to you, and it's been, and you've been disrespected, or whatever the case is. And instead of continuing to innovate, grow, build, whatever it is that you are doing on this earth, instead, some can go to complaining and gossiping.
Sure.
And just nonstop of doing that. And they find other people that like to do that too. And so they reinforce their stance. So instead of them trying to be like, I mean, maybe the answer is for you to be like, I'm leaving this company because of that. And that's fine.
Well, and that's happened.
But make the stance, right? Like, do it. Just don't bitch about it all
right,
the time.
Exactly.
And now I'm going to get yelled at for saying that in this podcast.
Okay.
But I didn't mean it in a derogatory sense. I mean it to a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Like when
stand
you
up
run,
for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. This goes across whatsoever in your pants. Like, do what you think is right, and gossip doesn't really get you anywhere.
Yeah, and ultimately, like I said, I mean, that those people that are making those decisions, they're not going to be around. And I've outlasted a lot of them. So
that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not only they're not going to be around, I lost a lot, but at the end of the day,
they're not going to be respected. People aren't going to follow.
And they're going to die.
Yeah,
we're all going to die. Yeah. We are, though.
Yeah,
at the end of the day,
yeah.
I mean, it's just like, we're all going to be dust, so why, like, get upset about shit?
Yeah. I mean, and I think you just, as a woman in the industry, unfortunately, you go through a lot of those, so you just have a lot of those instances, and you just kind of have to brush it off your back if you want. I mean, that's, you know, and some would say, well, that's not the right thing. You should stand up. And I definitely stood up when it was time, but I didn't overreact at that, you know, at that moment. It was more just, okay, I'm gonna take it in and I'll make my decisions later. And I've left companies because of that.
So I don't know if you maybe not talk about a specific one, but so for me, this is hard for me to completely empathize, because I'm not a female. So for me to be like, yeah, you guys are wrong or anything like that, like, I get it. I'm all behind it. We have a company full of women, but it's not because Mazama's not the vast majority women, because I was like, there's something wrong with the world and we're going to hire just women to fix it. It's because they interviewed the best and they've been doing the job the best and they've kept their job and they've progressed in the company.
Yeah.
That's why our leadership meeting is me and a bunch of women.
Yeah.
And it's Mitch, me, Drayson,
Justin.
Ethan, Justin, and Sam. And then we're all managed by women. And we're managed well. Chelsea's doing a great job. Who's in the podcast room right now, just managing like this whole new personal just brand saga that we're doing.
All. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, where I was going on that tangent is help me and other men that can be listening to this understand like what are some things that that women would deal with in the workplace that we're just kind of oblivious to, that we wouldn't like really understand, maybe whether if it's a double standard or like the way that you might be talked to. Or
I don't feel that I ran into too much being talked to a certain way. I felt like you were pretty fairly treated as far as how you were spoken to and what was maybe expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say that a challenge mostly for a woman in the industry is when you become successful, you're typically, you know, or I shouldn't say you're typically, for me, I was a young woman, and to have somebody that's older than my dad have to be able to listen or take direction or learn from, that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would probably go for both sides, man or woman. So I forgot the question.
I was talking like different ways that you could have been basically slighted or stuff like that, or some standards that apply to you but doesn't apply to men, for example. Or we could talk about, I mean, you just gave birth and what you were kind of going through when it comes to that stigma that happens in the
sure
country.
I think that's more, you know, on a day-to-day it's maybe not as obvious, but you know, there's this expectation in a lot of cases that, you know, like when I had my baby, everybody was, well, are you going to come back to work? Are you, you know, how long until you go out on maternity leave?
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, for me, it was kind of rolled with whenever I needed to. That's when I was going to go, and I just never ended up going.
Yeah.
I didn't take any time, even after I had him.
So then you're going to have people that are saying to you, that's awful. You should be a better mother. And then you'll have people that are saying, that's awesome. That's
sure.
Great that you're pushing the career along. And then if you do the opposite, where you take 16 weeks, which apparently is a lot, which is ridiculous. It should be like 6 months.
Or a year.
Or a year, or 2 years, actually.
Yeah,
Sweden.
I think it should be however long the person needs.
To grow a human and advance society.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting they, you know, it needs to be paid or anything like that, but there should be some allocated time to be able to decide what you want to do, because it's life-changing.
Yeah.
For me, I was able to keep pushing through, and that was great. And yeah, some people question my, you know, mother instincts, which that's fair, you know. Why do I not want to be at home? It's not that I don't want to be at home. I am lucky enough to have a good partner that is more than capable of handling.
But it wouldn't be a question if so James, your husband, if you were to stay home and he would go back to work.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a question at all.
No.
Why is that?
Because that's how life is, bud.
But
that's what you're supposed
to... But why does it have to be like that?
It's
two humans that are a partnership, that are married. Two humans...
I agree.
...that are working to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you be frowned upon, or any female, for going to work than a male?
I don't have the answer, and I don't think we ever will.
Well, I think that's a question.
Right?
I mean, it's a question that just... I think you don't need the answer. I think the question just needs to be asked.
Sure.
Like, why is this happening? why is it like, while people were listening to this, they're probably thinking to themselves, when you said that you went back to work right away, there had to have been a few people that heard and went, geez, she should be a better mom. But you don't think that when it's the other way around.
Yeah.
And you know who you are if you're listening to this. You know you thought that.
Sure.
So ask yourselves. And
I think that's just an old school, you know, non-progressive, not... kind way of thinking. And I can sit around and be upset that people feel that way. I know they're going to feel that way. It's just like anything that's happened in the industry, right? For me, growing in the industry and what, you know, the negative things that happen, I can either sit around and be upset about them or move past it and know that people just have different opinions of how everyone should live their life. And especially, you know, I mean, social media doesn't help with that. And so, you know, I mean, I think it's just getting past giving a shit what they think.
That's good, Jen. That's very stoic. What you're saying, it resonates well with me. It's like, why do we all care about what other people think of you?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, especially as a woman. You just can't give a shit. Men don't care as much.
I don't think anybody really cares as much. No. You know, when somebody like, so say, let's say somebody were to criticize me for anything I do, like criticize the logo, our logo, because it's too pointy and it's partisan towards round things. And how could you do that towards the round things and the round people of the world? That should be pointy, or it is pointy. And I could be like, gosh, you know, I never thought about the Mazama logo is too pointy, and you know, I'm just getting, just never thought about how I'm thinking, how I'm upsetting the round people. But at the end of the day, that person, that round person that was mad at the pointy logo, that was for a second, and now they're going on thinking about their own goddamn problems.
Correct.
So you get so upset about what the round people were thinking, mm-hmm. when really they moved on to their own goddamn demons that they're dealing with.
Correct. Yep.
It's like how long people, like, even when they get upset about, like, politics, then they're going in their mind and be like, God, you know, I had stuff at the grocery store I forgot to get, and did I leave the stove on?
Right.
And I think my wife's going to leave me, and oh my God. So you don't, like, but, and then you get so, I just love what you're saying, because you get so hooked on what other people are thinking of you, but they're not even thinking it.
No. And if they are,
so
that's their own problem. It doesn't, what does it matter?
I guess so, right? Even if they are thinking it, that doesn't control you.
It doesn't, no. And clearly, they have their own demons that they're dealing with, that they're concerned about what I'm feeling or thinking or doing or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, being a shining example, beacon of hope, if you wouldn't mind being, what are some good... like tips that you would say for women that want to advance, I think in any career, not just in auto.
Yeah, I mean, I consult for other careers, and I'm a big proponent of women in
the workplace.
Workplace, and then in leadership management roles. Be brave.
What do you mean by that?
Stand up for yourself.
How so?
You know, if something's not the way you want it, don't be afraid to say something. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what a lot of the men that have mentored me would say about me, right? I mean, I'm not afraid to say, hey, this is right, or this isn't right, or I like this, or I don't like that, or I want this, and I don't want that.
You definitely will say what's on your mind. I love that about you. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. Stand up for yourself.
What are some other things that women could do? Stand up for yourself. Be brave. Where else can you see that you've seen, like, out?
I think the biggest thing is to just be a leader, even if that's not your title, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just be a leader from the beginning in whatever role you're in.
And how do you define that? Leadership, I mean.
You know, leadership would be definitely going above and beyond what you're supposed to do.
Okay.
Handling conflict properly, in a way that's, you know, good for everyone, not getting emotional or too emotional. I think getting emotional is okay. I think that's necessary, man or woman. But I'd say believe that you deserve whatever it is you're going after.
Yeah.
You know, don't think that you're not worth whatever it is you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. So believe whatever it is you're going after. Do you, like, run into, or what do you think of... This stereotype doesn't really live here, but I know it exists, of just, like, if a man is leading and is making a decision and is just like, this is the way we're going, then he is brave and a great leader and courageous, all the good descriptions.
And I'm a bitch.
There you go.
Yeah. that just happens all the time. I think the only way to get around that is... be in the trenches with them. Show them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to lead by example. That's the only way. Telling someone to do something, whether you're a man or a woman, is not going to work. People but keep especially on saying as a
lead
woman.
By example. I mean, can you give an example of leading by example?
Sure. I mean, if I'm going to tell you, let's say we're in the auto industry, right? And when it's a sales associate comes to me and says, hey, this is what the customer is saying. Rather than me telling them, hey, go out there and say this and do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. If I just walk out and I talk to the customer, the salesperson is going to sit there and listen to me. And ideally, they're going to pick up what I'm saying, and I'm now leading them by example versus just telling them what they should go out and do.
Have you ever had that backfire you where they get just dependent on you doing that?
Sure.
Some individuals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
I guess
okay.
You just have to weed them out.
Well, yeah, or just work with them, right?
Yeah.
I mean... There's
Jen,
a reason.
I need you to close this guy again. He's like, okay, but I'm going to take the commission. Wait, what?
We're all paid on it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how you, especially those people, that's how you get your biggest following, though. Being mm-hmm. willing to just continuously go out and train and help and until they can do it on their own.
So, let's see. You've been in the auto industry from... Was it 4 GM positions that you've held?
Yeah.
Okay. And the last one brought you here to Bend.
Right.
So how did that happen?
My mom has multiple sclerosis. And that's okay. My dad, we knew, was going to retire, you know, fairly soon. Mm-hmm. And I knew that they wanted, ideally, they'd love to be in Bend. My husband loves to ski.
Mm-hmm.
I like warm weather. I don't like the rain. And so we ended up taking a position down here at the Subaru store.
So now what, like, where, can you explain how you have now turned into, like, this next stage in your life? Because you're in entrepreneur land now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to fill in any of the blanks. Just where are you at now? How'd you get there?
Yeah, Matt, you know, I was working for Matt, and his children were coming up in the industry and going to take over eventually, and I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that I wanted to kind of go out on my own and see what I could do. Bend's, as you know, a hard town to find good work in, you know, that is in the same realm of what I was doing. And
yeah, there's only so many dealerships.
Yeah, yeah. And mostly family owned, you know, couple non. But I decided to go out and work with a company called Principal Warranty Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And basically refer them dealer groups to help with their reinsurance and their warranties and their back-end finance stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were using them at the stores that I had been in previously, and I really liked the owners and kind of just their process and what they believed and where they thought the industry was going. So I decided to work with them and started meeting dealers and going in and talking about this and gained some business through that. And the dealer principals started saying, hey, Jen, do you do any consulting? Can we work with you? Can you help us, you know, with our financials? Can you take a look here? Can you help us with process? And that's kind of how my consulting developed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, through that, met some really great guys here in Bend that I now do some government government work with. And my kind of...
So consulting for auto and the government?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So how long have you been at the entrepreneur side of it?
Well, years ago in 08, I owned a salon and spa.
Okay.
So that was kind of my first dip into it, and quickly realized that I'm not talented in that industry at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any, you know, certificates and shouldn't be in it. So decided the second time around that I would stick with something that I was, you know, familiar with, and we've been doing that for about 3 years.
And what kind of is, have you been taking advantage of any of the sweet perks out there for being a woman-owned business?
As far as...
Shoot, I'm trying to remember. I was hoping you would know. Like, there's grants and all sorts of stuff that are applicable to
women-owned businesses. Yeah, you know, I haven't yet. You know, maybe down the road if I wanted to,
I'll check
know,
it
buy
out.
A dealership
a
and yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually.
You want to buy a dealership?
Potentially, never know. The right thing came along.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I'm not, you know, no grants or anything like that. Definitely involved in women, you know, groups and mm-hmm. different things like that that are promoting women. Part of the Next Gen program with NADA, and they have a woman ran group there that I participate in. And
what, how does that work? The women brand group, is that what you called it?
It's just a women in automotive, and okay. mostly get together, talk about how we can continue to grow women and drive women to our industry, mm-hmm. and kind of what's out there, resources that are out there for women in the industry.
What kind of resources are out there for them?
You know, it's not a lot right now. I'm getting involved more in trying to create, you know, potentially a 20 group that is women.
What's a 20 group for people though?
Yeah.
I know, but everyone is a
20. Well, see, now you're putting me on the phone. I don't know that I want to answer that, because if I don't answer it properly, the dealers...
I'll try to answer if you want. It's a bunch of, like, dealer managers and or owners that get together, and there's, like, 20 of them, and they all sit around the table and say, this is what's working at my dealership.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a group of dealers that get around. Yeah. They get around a table, and, you know, they meet typically quarterly, mm-hmm. and...
It's probably dominated by... Probably means definitely dominated by men.
Sure.
It can't not be.
No.
No.
So I'm trying to put together a woman only so that we can, you know, bounce ideas off each other on how to get women into the industry, even kind of dive deeper into it than mm-hmm. just say a, you know, weekend seminar and that kind of thing. So a group that meets quarterly and really dives into successes that other women are having and how we can ideally...
Like showcase that?
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Okay. So you'd need, like, marketing for that?
Yeah.
Okay, I know a company.
Do you? Who is it?
So that's pretty cool. So you're looking to basically showcase, this is what a bunch of women are doing here, some examples of, like, how you, too, can kill it in the auto industry.
And just be a resource for the dealers, because, like I said, I mean, a lot of dealers don't have, it's hard to hire a woman if you don't have a woman in the industry, right? And
yeah.
So... being that person for them to be able to have, you know, be able to go in and help.
Have dealers gotten in trouble over the years, like as a whole, for being so male dominated?
No, I mean, if you ask any dealer, any man in the industry, I don't know one that's going to go, oh, I don't want to hire a woman. They want to hire women.
Yeah, because women just don't want to work there.
Correct.
But then there's examples like you where you're making a ton of money and have built an amazing career off of auto.
Sure.
So more just need to see, I mean, any...
Right. I mean, it's just like, that's where talking about it, you know, and,
yeah.
and telling women that are not in the industry about it and why it could be good for them and, you know, what are the benefits and...
Do you think women think they can't sell cars? Or some
I don't
do?
Think that. I mean, I'm sure some do. I'm sure yeah. a lot of people think they can't sell cars.
Because there's a lot of great saleswomen selling other things.
Yeah.
Like pharmaceutical, all sorts of different
I think
industries.
It's partially the stigma, right? You, again, like I said, I'm a used car salesman.
But you're not.
Right.
You're new and used.
Yeah, sure. But they don't know that, right? They just think, you know, it's how are they going to be perceived, you know? And then also it's a little intimidating. You come in on 20 men, you know, and maybe two women salespeople, and who's going to be training you? Probably mm-hmm. a man. Who are you going to role play with? Probably a man.
Is that a bad thing?
No, but I would say that more women that I've encountered don't want to do those things with a man. They would feel more comfortable with a woman.
But why? I guess is my, like...
Fear of, probably the fear of what their opinion is, what they're thinking.
Oh, so we're back to that. So, the take home is don't give a shit.
Correct.
I mean, there's this huge opportunity.
Yeah.
And I, you know what, I think, I mean, this is just a hunch, but just the thought of showing up to buy a new truck or car, personally.
You'd rather have a woman.
I think so. I think I'm just so used
why?
To always being
why?
A guy coming out.
Why would you want a woman?
It's just because it's different is why I'm going towards it.
Different or?
It's different because.
That's it. Probably because you trust her more, right? You think you might trust her more?
Yeah, now that you bring it up, yeah, I would, yeah.
That's how most people feel.
Yeah.
That's why women...
If a woman came out, I'd be like, yeah, you're caring, empathetic.
Correct.
And those stereotypes, which are good ones,
right?
Yes, but use all the to your
reason,
advantage.
Right? All the reason women should get in the industry. Women, people want to deal with women.
Yeah. Okay, so that that was a really good visualization for myself, just pulling up and getting ready to go in dealership, and for once, because I don't think it's ever happened. I pull up to a lot of dealerships being in this industry.
Yeah.
A lot, and I'm used to, you know, I'm not going there to buy a car. That only happens once every 3 or 4 years. So on all the other times, which is probably 50 a year, I'm calling the vultures. They just come out and they're looking to sell me a car, even though I'm just there to sell them.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, what car are you looking to buy? I'm like, I'm looking to talk to your owner or GM, because
yeah,
we're going to do some business. But it's always a guy. It's always.
Yeah.
So just that alone, that if a woman came out, would be enough for me to be like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then you're absolutely right. If that's what I'm always used to when it comes to buying a car, then, and if I'm coming in, that's the other thing, is that when I'm coming to buy a car, I'm coming to go to war. I'm coming like...
Oh, yeah. My dad eats dinner and takes 3 Advil and then goes down and says he's ready. And I'm like, you're dealing with me. I'm going to bring the paperwork to you. What do you mean? And he's like, I know how this goes. And what?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's what people are prepared for.
Yeah. And so you have me prepared for war. And here I go. And I know I'm going to negotiate the best I can on this new X car, whatever I'm getting. And out comes a woman. I'm going to be disarmed.
Sure.
You're going to get more money out of me. Not because that's going to be taken in a different direction.
You're a real dick.
Oh, yeah, right. Jesus Christ. It's just based off of the fact that I'm so used to something.
Yeah.
And now there's change, and change puts the whole game plan out. It's just like, I'd just be like, well, I was planning on being a real jerk to the normal guy coming up, but this is... So anyway, what I'm trying to get at, ladies that are listening, is there's a huge opportunity for
yes.
you with dealerships that will hire you.
All dealerships will hire you.
Yeah.
There's not a dealership out there that I know of that would not take every woman that they could get that
mm-hmm.
wants to be, especially in sales, right? And
mm-hmm.
grow within the industry. The industry as a whole wants more women.
Right. So that, that's a good take. So also, what, as you've been growing your professional career, have you seen to be like big advantages of, I mean, we're on the subject a lot, I'm just gonna keep it there, but of like, we talk about the disadvantages a lot, and we just went over one advantage of like changing the game. What do you think would be other advantages of being a woman in the workplace in Oregon and Bend, or anywhere for that matter?
I just, you know, like, for one, I mean, and I know we already touched on it, but just the trust factor, whether it's with your employees, your guests, you know, I mean, the level of trust that women get kind of just naturally
mm-hmm.
is a huge benefit, and especially if you are a trustworthy person and you do what you say and you follow through, your credibility, obviously, at that point, I think, goes through the roof, and you have a probably an easier time of really actually holding your role and staying, you know, staying within your role and growing once you've proven that.
How long do you think a woman should, or any person should stay like, for those that are thinking, well, I don't know if I should stay in this position or like end up leaving, like, do you, because you've shifted
sure.
a bunch of times in your career. So what was the things that made you be like, no, it's time for me to go? Like, do you have some formula that you go through, or?
I just have an expectation. Each year I set a goal of what I want to accomplish. And as long as I accomplish that, I don't make a change. And if I don't accomplish that, I adjust. And whether that's personally or professionally, or, you know, have to find a different job or go a different direction, or, you know, I set the goals and I give it time.
Let's talk about goal setting.
Sure.
Okay. If you don't mind, what was your goal last year for 2019?
For 2019, well, that was just to make it through and have a baby that was healthy.
And you did it.
I did it. I accomplished
Congratulations.
Yes.
You done. And you know what? That needs to be awarded more in our society, because that's how we continue as a species. And Americans just go by thinking that's expected, and you're lucky if you get 6 weeks off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you're lucky if you're able to have a kid, right? I mean, that's the other thing, is
that's
a big
true.
Thing that's not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to get pregnant and lucky enough to deliver a healthy baby, and a lot of people aren't awarded that. So that's a good goal to actually achieve.
So when it comes to professional goals, how do you go about setting them?
I base it off of what I, you know, what did I accomplish the year before, and where do I see myself? So I break it down into a yearly goal, 5-year goal, 10-year goal, and then obviously retiring.
Okay.
And so for me, that's just, you know, I figure out, okay, do I want to buy a house this year? Is that what I'm going to do? Do I
mm-hmm.
want to be in this position? What do I need to do to get there? And I try to make them pretty realistic. And when you're in the industry, like, say, automotive, there's a pretty set path as far as what the next step is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the amount of time you have to spend in each step is much different depending on who you are and
sure.
what you do. But so I guess that's where a little bit of patience and...
But what you're saying is kind of, is, believe it or not, is... groundbreaking, earth-shattering, not standard, whatever, and that's just setting goals. Most people don't sit down and do what you're talking about. So that's why I'm asking more in depth on this. So if you're having a 1 year and a 5 year and a 10 year, what do you do? First of all, how does this process look like? Are you writing it down on a notepad? Are you opening it in a Word document? Like, where...
Yeah.
How does this go down?
I write it down in a Word document.
Okay.
And... have it on my phone, and I just, you know, I mean, I obviously achieve things throughout the year, and if I happen to achieve something a lot sooner in the year than I expected, I'll set myself another goal from, you
mm-hmm.
know, whatever point that is till the end of the year, and I just continue to focus on it. And I talk to my husband about it. I talk to my whole family,
if you know me, my whole family
is involved in my life, so
yeah.
They all know, so I have a lot of accountability, which is good.
That is good.
And it's a lot of people that rely on me,
yourself,
right?
Another to share with other people.
Yeah.
It's like I just started having a business coach. Let's see, been with Greg for 3.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And due to needing to meet with him every 2 weeks and writing down the things that I need to do has forced me to get healthy. It's forced me to make certain people here accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch, that's actually why you have the dial sheet as you're getting the sales and everything. That was something that Greg was like, no, we need to have a physical thing.
Okay.
And instead of me coming up with an idea as I do, and it was like, oh, we'll see if I get around to it. And okay, bud, let's see if you do, bud. And all right, bud. And just bud holding bud accountable. If bud doesn't do it, then bud will forgive him. But
yeah.
You know, with Greg having something else, to your point, that changes the game.
Yeah.
So share your goals with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, when you're writing down the goals and when you're setting them, how do you make sure? Well, I mean, when you say they're, if let's see here, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is you are at the same place you were when you set the goal, and 10 being, holy crap, you're not even at the moon, you're in the rings of Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you set your goals?
I make them very realistic.
So a 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how often do you check in on them?
Daily.
Daily?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I mean, I think that's the nice thing about having it on your phone, right? We all use our phone all the time.
Turns out.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Elon Musk said we're cyborgs. In a way, because they're always like attached to us, and there's more on there
yeah.
than
have a baby. Yeah. That'll change you. Now I'm like hiding my phone. I'm like, no, because I don't want him to see it.
Really?
Yeah, he already knows what a phone is.
Oh,
I
you don't
even
want the baby
him.
To
yeah,
see it.
So,
yeah,
so I mean, have a baby, you won't look at your phone.
Okay, got it. Done. Okay, so that's setting. So you're checking it daily. What I find really interesting on this subject that isn't talked about enough is, one, it's really easy to do.
Yeah.
So write down goals that are obtainable, and two, share them with people and make them accountable. But what happens when you don't do this?
When you don't set the goal, or you don't attain, mm-hmm. obtain them?
No, when you just don't set goals.
Well, I don't really know, because I don't not set goals. No, I mean, to be fair, it's the some years I don't set huge, huge goals. You know, maybe it's a small thing. So I guess I could relate as far as not setting, you know, big, ambitious goals. For instance, I mean, I didn't realize having a child would be such an achievement, but I didn't set a ton of goals because I knew I'd be tired. I knew, I didn't really know how the year would go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me what happened was I felt a little bit off. I felt unsure of my direction a little bit, and where I was going to be going and what is it going to look like when I'm done. And so about halfway through having Hank, or delivering him, I was like, okay, I gotta have a plan for the, 6 months
mm-hmm.
after I have him. What's that going to look like? And so I frantically put that together and,
it's a huge plan.
Ended up achieving it. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
how I would do that. Like I would end up figuring it out, but as of right now, I'm like, whew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody would feel that way, you know, and I think that's the hard part, is when you don't have goals, you feel unsettled.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you don't have a direction, maybe, at least for me.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You feel unsettled. You feel like you don't have a direction. It's like a man who is at sea without a port to go to. There is no right wind. There is no correct wind when you don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
So it's always just wind. There is no correct one. So if you have a goal,
win some, you lose some,
right.
But you don't really, you can't keep track.
At least you have a rudder. At least you know which way that you're going. And if you're off course, at least you know it.
Sure.
Instead of like, well, I don't know, it's just kind of how life's going right now.
Right.
But I'm upset.
Yep.
Okay. Well, what are you going to do about it? I was like, I don't know. Something's going to change. To do what? Make things better.
Be intentional, right?
What do you want to be better?
Be intentional.
I want life to be better.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that? I need a job. I mean, this is conversations I've had.
No, it's true.
With people that when they're not really happy or content with what's going on, there's no plan.
You know, I think that just to kind of go off on a side a little bit, it could be another great reason for people, man or woman, to get into the industry of sales. Because I think from a young age, and you probably could agree with this, you're taught to set goals every day, and you're expected. And so that probably just was instilled in me. I don't know that would be how I would be had I not at such a young age. Sorry, Bench. At such a young age, have to, set goals daily, weekly, monthly, yearly.
Let's talk about that for a little bit, because you and I are both salespeople. That's the right term now, right?
I have no idea.
You can call
me whatever. I don't know.
We're salespeople, Jen. So we just basically go back and forth on here. And what are some perks that you found in life by being good at sales that transcend selling a car or selling
business
services?
Well, I scored my husband. So if you've seen him, I had to sell that pretty hard. All the people in my industry know that.
Okay.
No,
I agree with you. So
just dealing with people, right? I mean, learning to read people, picking up on whether they're, listening, or they're wanting to be, dealt with the way you're dealing with them, or whatever it is. I mean, I think it's just it's definitely all people and how.
And people like they transcend just selling a car, where the case is. So with your point on picking up your husband is a very, very good point. And it's one where it's like, hey, if you're single and watching or listening to this and you're like, oh man, and you're just like dependent on Twitter, you want to step your game up, I'll tell you how to do it. Here's a little cheat code for you. Not Twitter, Tinder. Here's a cheat.
It's like, who picks up people on Twitter?
I'm sure it happens.
Missed that boat.
Yeah. But if you're dependent on Tinder or some sort of app, cheat code for you is get a job in the sales. Take it very seriously. Get very good at it. And then take those skills and go to a park or a bar or whatever. And because now something happens to you when you get said no to a lot in sales, because that's what happens. If you get serious about sales, you get said no to over and over and over again. And at first it stings, or it even burns or whatever. And then before you know it, it stings less and stings less. And then all of a sudden, rejection is not a big deal to you.
Same. Yep.
But it is a big deal to everybody else that you're competing with in the single dating game.
Yeah.
So now, while people are just looking to scroll, if you go and you actually blow somebody's mind by saying, hey, I was wondering if you'd like to go and get coffee sometime, and you watch him or her just kind of freak out, and they will respond. Don't worry, they're not going to hit you or anything. They're just going to be so shocked, and your odds are going up significantly because, again, it's different. Just like the woman coming out to sell me the car and that being different, me throwing me off guard, it is different to actually talk to somebody in the first encounter to ask them out somewhere. And how you can be good at that is by doing sales.
We should start a dating site.
You start a dating site? Yeah. Well, the dating site would be, hey, you're going to learn how to sell.
Right.
And we're not going to switch you. We're not going to make you match with people.
We're just going to reject
you. This is going to be crazy. You're going to learn how to sell, and then you're going to go out to the Capitol.
Ew, that's greasy.
You're going to go out to some bars or whatever, and you're going to actually talk to girls or guys and not fear rejection.
Yeah.
That was actually a bit of my superpower, so to speak, in college was I didn't fear. So I would get all these no's, but I would eventually get a girlfriend. I mean, Sarah, who is my a lovely ex-wife and partner right now, but wife, I met her when we were driving down the freeway going 70 miles an hour down I-5, and my friends were like, we're in college, we're like, hey, those girls are pretty attractive. And I said, well, catch up to them. And I rolled down the window and started screaming as we were driving super fast and put my number on a sheet and put it on there. And she took it down and we ended up meeting up. And that came from not fearing rejection. Like, what do I have to lose? I mean, she could just keep driving away. It's okay.
Sure, she may not call.
So another thing that's good on sales, that's like on a personal note, but it's an important one. I mean, people are looking for who they're going to share their life with. And they really take this seriously, as they should. It's a huge thing. It is the thing. It is the thing.
Like, it's what we all want, right?
Yeah. When it comes to, like, people are looking around for, what's the purpose of life? I'll tell you the purpose of life is to continue to keep the species going. You do good to people, you make a baby, and you die. That's what you're supposed to do.
I don't know if everybody wants to make a baby, though.
Well, then they're not fulfilling the actual purpose of what our species is supposed to do.
I think we shouldn't share this part of it.
I've just decided, I was just like, fuck it. Sometimes I really don't care what I say on this. but anyway, so that's something that people really do cherish, is just like finding that someone.
That connection.
And it's not just going to happen by you sitting, hoping that they'll come to you. You have to go seek it out and be afraid to be rejection. So the other thing that helps with a lot is negotiation. Because sales has negotiation. And negotiation happens in things like car buying, house buying, salary negotiation, and you have this fear of
rejection,
being fired, all sorts of stuff, being asked for a promotion. What happens if they say no? Then they just say no.
Right. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You don't die.
Nope. It's true.
Or maybe it's someone really evil. I don't know. Maybe, but I highly doubt that. Other perks that you think of, kind of rolling. I keep going. But
yeah. What am I?
Sales perks.
Oh. Sales perks?
Yeah, from being able to know how to sell, how that helps you in life.
Oh. I mean, my biggest thing always, mine always comes back to people. Because people, it's everything. It's in everything you do. Everything you deal with people. So for me, the perk of sales is being able to deal with people.
Being able to read them, and I'll say the thing that people don't like saying, but getting them to do what you want.
Sure. Yeah. That's it. Yes. Absolutely.
It is what it is.
But yeah.
That is a game.
Yeah.
Of trying. But
well, it's like anything, right? Your spouse, your kids, any relationship.
Soon you'll be using your skills on.
Yes, I will be I'm already negotiating. I'm like, you can't have this, but you can have this. You're driving me crazy.
And it's gonna continue to happen when it comes to making diet choices, sports to play for, whether or not there's to be studying homework. How can you make doing homework Hank's
best
idea?
For you. Yeah, or Hank's idea, yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So we were just talking about, Mitchell, like how to make things the person you're trying to sell to, their idea.
Yeah.
And that is true for a child, a spouse, a friend.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to go skiing, and they kind of want to sit around and do nothing. Like, hey, you just got to phrase it around a little bit, just being like, when was the last time you had a fun time outside?
I want
to
ski.
Just kind of see how the conversation goes.
I would never do that. I'd be like, I'll sit at the bar. And you can go skiing. But then you both win.
Yeah. So that sort of strong flex, I think, end up helping a lot of women, a lot of men, just being able to sell to end up getting what they want the most in life. And if you're looking to do it, then head on down to your local car dealership. And they'll
get a sales job.
They might teach you, depending on who your teacher is. What should you be looking for? So for somebody who's taking us like really seriously and they want to go and maybe a woman's just like, yeah, you know what? I want to change a game up and I want to be successful like Jen. Kill it in the auto industry.
Yeah.
What should I look for in a teacher? Somebody that's hiring them.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty loaded question. I think you have to be willing to adapt. You have to be adaptable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because likely whoever's teaching you isn't probably going to teach you the way you want to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
But being open, you know, the nice thing about a dealership is there's a lot of people you can learn from. And there's a lot of people that want to help you succeed. So I would just say, be open, show up, put in the extra work, be there longer than everyone else.
What is the extra work? What would you think? Like,
yeah, well, for the auto industry specific,
yeah,
time,
for a sales job specific.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Plan on, you know, setting out, okay, the first 6 months of my career, I'm going to be there every day. I'm going to come in. I'm going to work open to close. You know, and I mean, obviously there's going to be things that come along with that, but be willing to put in the time up front because it'll get easier.
But there's one thing about time. So it's one thing to be there every day and be there open to close. But there's another thing when it comes to if you're just sitting there with your thumb up your ass.
Sure. I mean, I would take any and all training, right? Courses, you know, find a company that... However you learn best, find a company that manages their process that way. So
mm-hmm.
Find out, do they, you know, have a training program? Do they mentor you with their senior salespeople? Do they have involvement from the management staff? And then...
Is there a bunch of leads that people aren't calling because they don't want to because they're afraid of...
Sure, that too.
Because that happens. Just because you have a title of a salesman, I know plenty of them in the auto industry and other industries, but they're not good at it.
Yeah.
So they sit there and they're like, no, I want the client to come to me.
Yeah.
And I will sit here and I'll
be
ready to sell them when
that.
They get here.
That won't happen.
Right.
Yeah, you won't be successful.
So it takes, it takes cold calling.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. And listening and
mm-hmm.
following. I mean, every dealership's going to have their set, you know,
system.
And following that and trusting and. I pick out the person that's the most successful within the dealership.
What do you think about this whole new notion of stuff that I've been seeing going on where there's just this rise of, and I know that it works. I mean, heck, we offer it as a product when it just comes a personal brand and it helps lead to leads. But the thing is it doesn't come close to picking up the phone
mm-hmm.
and just pounding down. But that's become, I've just seen more and more amongst... the work culture, like, oh no, people are above that or wherever the case is and they just don't want to do it. What kind of benefit do you think people would get if they just got over that and picked up that phone?
Well, I think especially in our industry, I mean, I agree with you a little bit, but also in the automotive industry, you of all people with your company, I mean, you know best how people want to communicate.
Right.
And I think the most important is finding out how they want to communicate.
Okay.
And
so you can pick up the phone in not just a phone call, but a text
uh-huh.
or a message or
sure.
whatever, but just straight up outreach
uh-huh.
and not ready just for all the inbound stuff like a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Sure, just reaching out and mm-hmm. cold calling, essentially.
And the numbers game yeah. that comes with that.
Yeah.
I think that's a... How do you look at the numbers game when it comes to training people?
It's just a numbers game.
I know, I mean, but people hear that all the time. So, well, that's just a normal saying, but how do you break that down? So it's just like, oh, wait, these... She was saying numbers game, but...
You need to make this many phone calls, mm-hmm. talk to this many people, set this many appointments, and you'll have this many sales.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so whatever it is your goal is, you back into it.
You reverse engineer it.
Correct.
And that would pretty much work within any sales...
Absolutely.
...position. Yeah. So this many dials equals this many presentations equals this many sales. How do you see there were some salesmen and or salespeople, where do you see that they lose that? They lose that idea.
Fear of rejection, right? Getting told no too many times, getting hung up on.
So they get rejected enough so they just stop.
Yeah, it's not working, I'm done.
So how do you get somebody over that?
Dial in front of them. Dial with them. Mm.
So when you do end up dialing with them, what do you do when you get rejected on?
I just hang up the phone and get pissed, throw the desk. And... No, you just move on, right? I mean, you're yeah. going to get rejected. Mm-hmm. You're going to get hung up on. I set them up for that when I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
You know, okay, here we go. We'll see how many we cannot get hung up on and how many we don't get rejected, right?
Yeah.
And you get better. Your pitch gets better. You work on your pitch.
Mm-hmm. And then and eventually you don't care about rejection and you're able to get like the love of your life.
Yep. Exactly. That's how it works.
All right, Jen. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I had a blast. Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Yeah. Uh-huh.